My name is Levi, and I am an evolutionary biologist. I am also a Christian. And so the goal here today for me is to just sort of give you a little sense into how that actually works in my life. And really more than anything, what I want to convey. So if you don't get anything else that I say today, my goal is just that you get this message that there doesn't have to be this contention or this animosity between science and faith. And this is take-home message for the whole talk today is just simply that I find both science and faith really fulfilling parts of my life. And it's not that everyone has to. I certainly don't expect all of you to become evolutionary biologists. There are a few of you in this room that I do want to become evolutionary biologists, but that is because you are my students and I am training you as such. So, and if you go on and you do other things with it, that is fine with me. But my goal is not to make everyone evolutionary biologists. I can assure you that. The goal is more just to sort of get across this point that science and faith don't have to be enemies, and I think that would be very good for both science and faith in our country and in our world. And so, thank you, Shane. So, a little bit about me, just to give you a sense. I know very, very little about theology and faith. So I am not up here today because I am an expert on theology and faith. Sharon, sitting here, is far more of an expert than I am. So a lot of what I talk about today in terms of the faith side is going to be my personal experience because that is what I know. However, on the science side, I do have about 20 years of experience studying evolutionary biology, just to give you guys a sense. And so, for all of the kiddos in here, or just people that are trying to put it in perspective, I went to school until 22nd grade. If you can fathom that, that's a lot of biology to learn until 22nd grade. I don't claim to be an expert in everything evolution by any means, but there are a few things that I do happen to know a lot about because I've been thinking about them for about 20 years. And so, in my lab, what we study, we certainly define ourselves as evolutionary biologists or evolutionary geneticists, and we use a particular method of studying evolution called experimental evolution. And experimental evolution is pretty wild, and essentially what it is we take bacteria or other microscopic things, and we actually evolve them in the lab. So if you come into my laboratory, you will actually, if you came in my laboratory and you spent a month in my laboratory, you would actually see things evolve. So within a single day, you're probably not going to see anything. But if you give us, you know, give us a couple weeks, you can definitely see things evolve. And so there are multiple people in this room that that are in my lab and that have seen evolution take place. And I think that's just an incredibly powerful thing. And as far as me studying science, I really like to study something that's incredibly tangible. And so we use experimental evolution to ask questions primarily about, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but as biologists, we actually don't understand why sexual reproduction evolved. And as you might know, in terms of biology, that's pretty important for biology and for life to continue. And so, so one of the things that we study in my lab is why that's beneficial. Why, another way of asking that question is, why don't we all just clone ourselves? Like, it would be so much easier if we just cloned ourselves, right? So Maggie's sitting there. You would not exist if we cloned ourselves, kid. There'd just be another Levi here. So one of the questions that we study in my lab is exactly that. And the way that we come at that question is very heavily from this idea of the evolution of disease, because we think, and it's somewhat ironic that I'm up here now with the cold telling you guys all this, but the whole idea is that by sort of mixing up our DNA, mixing up our genetics, that we can sort of get one step ahead or stay one step ahead of the diseases. And so that's really what we study in my lab, is we carry out a lot of that work. Wraith in the back and Jordan over there are doing a lot of that work in my lab right now. So if you guys have questions about it afterwards, I'm not going to go in deep into the science here, but they are experts. They can tell you about it. You can also ask me questions on really anything you want to know. And so what I want to tell you about today on the faith side of things, we'll kind of break the talk down a little bit into the faith side, and then I'm going to go into more of the science. But for me, some of you have heard me talk about this before on our God Story Sunday several months ago, or maybe even last year. I talked about my God story. I'm going to just sort of give you guys the sort of quick summary of that, and we're going to launch from there. So really where my faith started was when I was in high school. I was 16 years old, and I was obsessed with football. I am still obsessed with football, so Freddie knows this. We have tons of football conversations. I absolutely love football. But I think it was at a place for me there where that's how I defined myself, as a football player. That's what I care about. That's what gave me inherent value as far as I saw myself. And I will just say, like, straight up, I had absolutely amazing parents. They were very loving. They were very caring. But nonetheless, my mind went to sort of valuing me as a football player. And so I worked really, really hard, at football. It was my thing. And then right at the beginning of my sophomore season in football, I had a really nasty injury and broke this arm. I don't know if you guys can see the sort of a nasty scar there. There's a pretty good scar on this side too. There's all kinds of crazy tricks that I can do with it. So if your children want to be grossed out afterwards, send them to me. I can do crazy, crazy things. When you're a camp counselor, that comes in super handy. So anyway, I broke the arm, and basically for a whole season, that just took away football. And that was exactly the thing that gave me my value. And so when you have that thing that you sort of use to define yourself, and then it goes away, that's incredibly difficult, and it leaves you very stranded and sort of adrift. And so for me, that's when I started saying, like, wow, there's just got to be something more in life. Like, this can't be it, because we had this freak occurrence on the football field, and it takes away my life's meaning. That does not seem right, and that doesn't seem like the life that I want to live. And so I was freaked out. My body was still broken, so I was going through all this rehab, trying to get healthy again. But more than anything, just mentally and emotionally, like, it definitely broke me and scared me. And so you guys aren't going to get the full God story here, because I want to talk more about science things. But if you go back, listen to the God story from several months or even last year, you'll get the full story. But the basic idea is that at that point, I said, I definitely need to have some sort of anchor in my life. I have to have a value system that I can use to define me that is so much bigger than really me. I just wanted to connect to a higher power and really a higher love. And so it was in God that I found that. And in God and in the teachings of Jesus. And it was at that point that I really just committed myself to following those teachings. And for me personally, that absolutely changed my life. And it changed my life in several different ways. But for one thing, it really grounded me, it centered me, and it allowed me to see that I was loved. And like I said, I had amazing parents, and they loved me very much. But it was like a deeper love. It was like a love almost by the universe, right? And in that sense, it just gave me an incredible amount of peace in my life. And that has been that way ever since. And that is just so incredibly valuable to me, because if any of you know me, you know that I'm a planner, and I can worry like no one else. And so having this like grounding in this just very deep, universal peace was really key for me. The other little side bit to this story, that's somewhat, ironic is, about a month after I became a Christian, one of my friends came up to me and she said, I have this friend who would really, really, really is interested in going on a date with you. But are you a Christian? Because she probably would only go on a date with someone that's a Christian. And so I was like, well, actually, Yes, I am. As of about last month, yes, I am. And so that girl actually turned out to be Emily, who is my wife. So anyway, this whole decision to have faith, it really reaped rewards almost immediately. So I do want you to know that I'm not promising that for anyone else. I cannot, absolutely not. So anyway, from this standpoint, my faith is just a really important component to my life. But I want you all to understand that as I'm talking through you through about this faith journey, my faith is very much a subjective topic, meaning that it's influenced by my personal experiences, and it is in no way, you know, sort of hard facts to other people. It is fact to me because I can see it through my lens. And when I talk to my students about the science and faith, I don't know, struggle, I guess you would say it. I often talk about how, you know, I think faith is incredibly valuable, but it's important to remember that faith is subjective. And to give you an example of something that is subjective, I like to give my students the example that I think that Tina Fey is the funniest comedian, period. So if you've ever seen Tina Fey, she was on Saturday Night Live or 30 Rock. But that is my subjective opinion. All of you sitting here in the audience might think that other people are way funnier. And I will tell you that my subjective opinion that Tina Fey is the funniest is no doubt impacted by the fact that Tina Fey is my celebrity crush. So you should know this. Should not feel bad for Emily either, because we have a deal that if I die, then she gets to marry Thor from the Marvel movies. So she's doing fine. You don't need to worry. You do not need to worry about her in any sense. And so Maggie will be well taken care of either way. It's going to be all right. You'll be good. So I found this faith when I was 16 years old, and I ended up going to a wonderful little church in southern Indiana. The people there are very much like family to me. Some of them were family to me, and we loved each other a lot. And it was a good environment to sort of grow up in. But it was also very very restrictive, and they had very strict views on a lot of things, including literal interpretation of a lot of biblical passages. And so it wasn't uncommon for me to go in on Sunday mornings and hear the preacher rail and just, you know, talk about how science is horrible, talk about how evolution is not legitimate, and how all these scientists are trying to lead us astray. And you know, at the time, I thought, okay, yeah, well, whatever. That seems like it could be the case, and I didn't really think too much of it, to be honest, until I went to college. And when I was in college, I decided to major in biology. I absolutely love biology, and I thought it would be cool to know more about that. And so I started studying it, and I mean, almost immediately, I'm taking classes where professors aren't just asking me to believe that evolution is legitimate and this very well-supported science. We're actually looking at data. We're seeing evidence, like hard evidence, that evolution makes a lot of sense. And so, oddly, it was actually that sort of conundrum I was facing, where I was hearing one thing at church and seeing something else in my biology classrooms, that led me to basically saying, like, I got to figure this out. And it wasn't so much that, you know, I felt like science, like my love of science, depended on what I thought about evolution. But it was clear to me from my science classes that evolution was really critical for biology as a subject. And if I was going to study biology, I just really needed to know what the deal was. And so this is actually what got me into experimental evolution. So I was telling all of you that when I do experimental evolution, we actually see evolution happen in the lab. And the reason that I got into experimental evolution is, as an undergrad, I just said, man, like, I just can't live, I can't, like, put away this idea of, you know, ones that my church that I care about so much thinks evolution is terrible. The science that I'm learning in my classes is so fascinating to me, but they have this thing that just doesn't agree with my church. And so I said, you know, I just have to actually like get firsthand knowledge of this. And so I said, I went to one of my professors who I respect a great deal. And I went to him and I was like, look, here's the deal. I need to see evolution happen. Like, help me out. How are we going to do this? And he was like, hey, let's roll. Let's get some projects going. And so we, from there, actually started developing experimental evolution projects. And the funny thing is, his lab had actually never done experimental evolution projects up to that point. And since then, after working as an undergrad in his lab, actually came back and worked as a postdoctoral fellow in his lab. His lab has probably done like 20 or 30 different experimental evolution projects now. But I jump in as an undergrad and I really want to see evolution happen. And so we do an experiment where we're evolving some nematodes. If you hang around my lab, you're going to hear nematodes a lot. They're microscopic worms. And we're using some bacteria, some nematodes. We're evolving things. And I remember I went in one day to collect some data, and this was going to be sort of the definitive data for my undergraduate work, and it was essentially the question of, like, did these populations evolve over the course of the semester? And particularly, we're looking at them if they evolved a particular way, but the big question to me was, did they evolve? And so I went in that day, I collected the data, and I went home that night and sat down to analyze my data. And as I analyzed my data, it was incredibly apparent that evolution had happened and that a significant amount of evolution had happened over the course of the semester. And I was absolutely blown away. So on one hand, I thought, this is the coolest thing ever. This is an awesome project. I love this. It is so cool to know that evolution will happen this way. And then as a researcher, I was the first person in the entire world, in the history of time, to have ever done that experiment, to have ever known that fact at that moment. And so it was so cool to be on the cutting edge of discovery. But at the same time, I went to bed that night and I was like, evolution is legitimate. Like, evolution is real. I've just seen it. I've done this experiment. And so I specifically remember laying in bed that night thinking, like, well, I guess I'm not a Christian anymore because evolution worked. So that's pretty much it. And so I went to bed that night being like, man, that sucks. Like, I really liked faith and too bad. So anyway, I woke up the next morning and I was like, you know, like, I don't really feel any different. Like, I definitely still feel like God loves me. And I feel like there is a God and that God loves me. So maybe there's not as big of an issue here as I thought. And so that's really where I started digging into this idea of, does there have to be this conflict between science and between faith? And so, this is generally what I tell my students on our second lecture of the semester. Unfortunately, my second lecture of the semester, this semester, I was sick and didn't get to give that. So it's going to be the third lecture this time, guys. So be prepared. It's coming. And now you're already going to know all of my jokes for that lecture upcoming. So just laugh anyway and, you know, pretend it's funny. You might not think they're funny in the first place, but it's okay. So the first thing that I really settled on here is this idea that my faith was subjective, and science is objective. And so to get across this idea of science being objective, the idea is that if multiple people look at the same scientific outcome or fact, they're going to see the same thing. It is essentially, you know, a hard fact. And so one objective question that I like to ask to sort of get this point across in class, I'm asking all of you, so this is audience participation here. There's some of you in this audience that I think will likely know the answer to this. Does anyone know who won the AFC championship in 2014? Any ideas? Just knowing it, the history of the NFL, you can make a pretty good guess. Any ideas? Ah, yes, Jen nails it. What do you got, Freddie? You are close. You are close. Jen nailed it. It is the New England Patriots. So the New England Patriots, they won the 2014 AFC Championship. Now, here's the bigger question. Does anyone know who they defeated for the 2014 AFC Championship? Emily nails it. It was the Colts. It was the Colts. And it was a terrible, terrible game. I am a Colts fan, just so you all know. It was Patriots 45, Colts 7. So that is an objective result. So I can ask all of you, and we can all agree, unfortunately, that the Patriots won that game 45-7. And as much as my personal opinion would love it if the Colts had just completely demolished the Patriots in that game, it did not happen. And history says that that's not the case. So that is a very objective question, this idea of who won that. So science in and of itself, it's a tool. And it's a tool that we use to objectively understand the natural world. And so we can take pieces or facts, pieces of evidence in the natural world, we put them together to try to have a general understanding of how the natural world operates. And as I was going along my journey and trying to figure out how do we get around or how do we diffuse this conflict between science and faith, I drew great comfort from this idea that science is, it's all about the natural world. And importantly, I have a faith that God is supernatural. Quite frankly, if God wasn't supernatural, then I wouldn't want to believe in God, because that would be a God that was sort of confined to the rules of this earth. And I want to believe in a God that is supernatural and has great power and loves me beyond anything, right? And so science is this tool that, it's a wonderful tool here in the natural world that we can use to explore the natural world. But it actually, by its very definition, can't say anything about the supernatural. The supernatural is beyond science. And so this idea, unfortunately this gets muddled often in the media and just in the world in general. So science can't prove or disprove if there is a God. God is bigger than science, and science is just simply a tool that we have here to understand the world. And so as someone who has faith, I think you can take heart in this idea that science can never actually intrude upon the realm of faith. The realm of faith is very separate from the realm of science. And I want to say that from the perspective that you don't have to be afraid of the two sort of colliding and one winning and one losing. But that's not to say that both can't be really great, right? So I'm not telling you to just separate the realms of faith and science and pick one and don't go with the other. My goal here today is to tell you I actually think both realms can be really important for our life and be really fulfilling. But I also want you to know that you don't have to be afraid of science. The science can't say anything about that. And unfortunately, there are some people out there who have vastly overinterpreted the powers of science and said, God is dead because we've discovered this thing. I guarantee you there is nothing that you can discover that is going to make that the case. And like I said, I am an evolutionary biologist. It seems like evolution is always thrown into that conflict, and I guarantee you there is nothing out there that you need to be afraid of. So with that, I do want to take just a couple minutes here and talk about evolution and just give you, I think evolution is a stumbling block for most people in this science versus faith issue. And so I will just say that after years of thinking about this, like I said, I've been going for about 20 years. After sort of getting to this point where I felt like I could define what science is, what faith is, and see the importance for both of them in my life, then I was really curious as to how I could sort of think about evolution in a way that was true to what I knew about evolution, but wasn't threatening. And the more that I thought about it, the more I really see evolution as this incredible creative tool of God. And I want to be really clear that the science part of that explanation is it is an incredible creative tool. So the way that species, the species arise from one another, absolutely, like that is scientific fact. However, this idea of it being a tool of God, that is very much the subjective part of that. So that is my faith saying that I believe that we do have this creator God, and that evolution is the most likely means through which creation occurred. And one thing I probably should have done before I said that is I do also want to give you guys a sense of what evolution is. And so a lot of people that I talk to that have problems with science and faith, they often will say, oh, you know, like I don't buy into this idea of evolution. And then immediately they jump to, I don't see how we could have life on earth without God. And let me just tell you right away, there's a whole field of study that is on the origin of life and how life came about on Earth. I think there are some very interesting studies there. I am not an expert on that in any way. And what I will just tell you is that evolution has nothing to do with how life came about. So a lot of times people will sort of want to take it there. And in my mind, that's a bit of an overinterpretation. Like I said, there are fields of study in science that do study that. And I think they do very quality research. I just am not an expert in that area. But evolution really takes over once we have life. And the idea of evolution, there are really two definitions that I use of evolution with my students. And one is this sort of big idea of evolution, and it's what we call the theory of evolution. And I want to be really careful here as well that theory doesn't mean what you think it means. So in science, if you have a theory, this is a collection of observations that have been made over many years that all come together to support the same idea. And so this is something that, so me, myself, like, and my lab, we could never generate a theory in science because you need hundreds of scientists over tens, if not hundreds of years to put their data together to support this theory. And so something does not become a theory easily. It is very, very difficult. And so one theory that we have in science is the theory of gravity. So hopefully you guys all get that, like, gravity's a thing. And people have studied it many times. And so gravity is a theory. So evolution is also a theory. And the way that evolution is a theory is by what we call descent with modification. And the idea with that is that species give rise to other species. And they do this through means of natural selection. There are some other evolutionary forces. Happy to talk about those. You can talk to my students as well. But the big idea of evolution is that once we have life on Earth, that life on Earth is going through this evolutionary process and creating the diversity of life that we see on Earth. And with all of the evidence that we have, this is biology, astronomy, geology, chemistry, you name it. We put all that evidence together, and over the last 150 years, this evidence supports this idea of descent with modification, that species give rise to other species. And Emily once asked me, when I was first pulling her along on this crazy journey, she said, well, you know, what if you ever discovered that, that this theory of evolution was, what if you had data that was counter to the theory of evolution? Like, what would you do in that case? And I said, I will tell you what I would do. If I had data that was counter to the theory of evolution, I would win a Nobel Prize, and it would be amazing. So I guarantee you, in the case of scientists, there is nothing that we love more than taking down hypotheses and taking down theories by generating data that are in conflict with that. And I will just say that over 150 years, the theory of evolution in lots of different fields, lots of different experiments, has been supported by the evidence. And I'm more than happy to talk about, you know, evidence with you all later, but I guarantee you there's a substantial amount. So that is evolution as a theory. In addition, in my lab, we talk about evolution as a fact. And so I told you that in my experiment as an undergrad, I saw evolution happen. Well, that wasn't, you know, one species giving rise to another species. That takes a lot of time. So what we tend to observe in most cases as the evolutionary process is genetic change over time. And so this is new genes or new variants of genes arising in particular populations and them changing that population over time. And this is something, like I said, in our lab that can be observed within a period of weeks. And what's funny is I've been in churches before where being an evolutionary biologist is like not cool at all. And so I would get to know lots of people before I would unleash that term on anyone. However, what I would tell those people often is they would say, oh, Levi, you're a grad student, or, you know, you're a professor. What do you study? And I'll say, oh, I study how genes in populations will change over time. And they're like, oh, that's fascinating. Tell us about how genes in populations change over time. I'm like, oh, I will do that. And so it's funny. You take away the word evolution, people are totally cool with it. that's just the way it goes. So really, as it comes to evolution and my faith as a Christian and potentially your faith as well, kind of the only point of contention for faith and science as it pertains to evolution is this idea of a 7-day creation that is put forth in Genesis. And I will say Nathan did an awesome job paving the way for me on this. So if you listen to his History of Science talk from 2 Sundays ago, he talks about how this idea of the literal 7-day creation actually comes about through kind of a funky means of people trying to predict the end of the world, basically, and trying to assign these particular dates, even though it's somewhat ironic that there are pieces of the Bible that also say that you can't predict the end of the world. So they were literally interpreting certain parts of the Bible, but not literally interpreting other parts of the Bible. But I will just say, you know, if you have trouble with this, with evolution, So I should also say that evolution takes time. So seeing these changes in populations over time, it takes really millions of years. And one thing that can be really difficult for people to grasp is how long the Earth has been here and how long life has been going. And so I don't want to go too far over here, but I want to do just a quick little exercise with you all and to give you a sense for evolutionary time. So you can see how, so long as you don't interpret that 7-day creation as literal, then evolution as this creative tool of God makes a lot of sense. So what we're going to do is I'm going to stand up here with my arms apart like this. If we decide that the very end of my fingertips out here is the very beginning of the Earth. So the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. This is backed up by multiple forms of science. But if we assume that the beginning of the Earth is here, and we assume that right now, at this very moment, is the tip of my fingernail over here. And so as we move this way across my arms, we are getting closer to present day. So, and can anyone take a guess and tell me where on my arms do we actually see evidence of the very first fossils on Earth? So where do we think like life is really starting to happen on Earth in this great timeline? Right on my left palm. Oh, that's good. That's good. What'd you say? Right shoulder. Okay, so we're thinking maybe over here, maybe here. Oh, that's good. That's good. I like it. It's awesome. You guys are good. Like you guys are on. Daryl, you got one? Beginning and end, going for that. Okay, nice. So you guys are pretty good. The shoulder thing is pretty close. So we're talking somewhere between elbow and shoulder over here. Okay, that's awesome. So mammals, we are mammals. We give live birth to our offspring, and when we go outside, we see a lot of mammals, like, you know, squirrels and dogs, cats, whatever. Where do we think mammals came about? Life starts somewhere in this realm. Where are we thinking mammals? Any ideas? Left elbow. Okay. Yeah. A couple left elbows. Those are good guesses. So mammals are just past my watch, basically. And so now the question becomes, What about primates, and particularly ones that are those that closely resemble humans? What do we think? What'd you say? End of the fingernail. Sarah's on it. She's good. So absolutely. So if we think about evolutionary time as sort of my wingspan, humans are coming in like right about the start of my fingernail on that middle finger. So evolutionary time is just incredibly vast, and there's been a huge amount of time for little changes to accumulate over time, and absolutely for species to diverge. And if you think about it, having that much time, then, you know, evolution can be this incredible creative tool of God to generate the diversity of life that we see on Earth. And so essentially, if we can sort of move past that literal seven-day creation, I will tell you that I view those chapters in Genesis as being sort of very poetic and really setting the stage of God as being the creator. So as opposed to being like a very specific science textbook and answer, it's more to me just sort of setting the stage, saying that God is behind all this. And to me, we have all of this evidence that suggests that evolution is this process that is giving rise to the diversity of life on Earth. And one thing that I really refuse to do as a scientist and as a person of faith is believe that there's this God that is trying to trick me. So I might have a bad experiment, like, you know, something goes weird, or, you know, there are periods of time where science will take us down roads where we're like, oh, well, you know, we thought this was the case, but we've done a few more experiments, and now we think this is the case. I don't mean tricking us like that. I mean tricking us in the sense of we have 150 years of data that are backing up the evolutionary process. And I just can't believe in a God that is trying to trick me in that sense. And so really, to me, then Genesis 1 and 2 just sort of set God up as that creator. And if we go and we study the world and we study what's going on in nature, we actually see that evolution is this incredible creative process. And so the last thing I'll say here is, you know, if nothing else from today, I just want you to take away this idea that science and faith don't have to be mortal enemies. I really don't want you to lay down and go to sleep one night thinking like, oh, well, evolution is legit, so I guess I can't be a Christian anymore. Because the beautiful thing about life is that you can embrace both of those realms. And I think science gives you, and at least for me personally, it gives me really deep satisfaction in studying the world, but it doesn't give me that deep inner peace that my faith does. And so if I just had science, I wouldn't be as happy as I am. And if I just had my faith, then I wouldn't have my passion that I study every single day in life. And so both of them are incredibly fulfilling for me. And I don't expect all of you to become evolutionary biologists, but I do want you to see that there doesn't have to be that conflict, and you can really embrace both. So with that, I'm going to give it to Nathan. I'm going to say a quick prayer, and then Nathan is going to do time of response. We'll go from there. Feel free to ask me questions afterwards, and yeah, we'll wrap it up. Holy Father God, we Lord, I just thank you so much for this church, and I thank you for Pastors Carrie and Nathan, and just giving me the platform to talk here today. And Lord, I pray that you give us a healthy perspective on science and faith as we go forward, and help us to embrace all the wonderful things of faith, and to utilize all of the tools that science gives us to better our world. In Jesus' name, amen.